A week ago this morning, when a massive earthquake hit off the coast of Sumatra and tsunamis swept across the Indian Ocean, international attention immediately turned to the first stages of determining the depth of the tragedy and the scope of the devastation. That day, the death toll was reported to be 2,000, then 6,000, then 7,000 in five countries. First impressions soon gave way to a much harsher reality. From Indonesia to Thailand, Sri Lanka, India, the Maldives, and to Somalia on the eastern coast of Africa, more than 100,000 people had died in a dozen nations. Countless square miles of seashore had been swamped. Fishing villages, whole towns, and luxury resorts had washed away. Concern quickly turned toward treating and feeding survivors, and trying to prevent disease from claiming as many lives as were lost to the first tsunami waves. Early in the week, the world's wealthiest nations reached tentatively into their treasuries to extend a preliminary helping hand. Jan Egeland, the United Nations Emergency Relief Coordinator, found the first offers of help meager.
And it is beyond me why are we so stingy, really, when we are, and even Christmas time should remind many Western countries, at least, how rich we have become. And if actually the foreign assistance of many countries now is 0.1 or 0.2% of their gross national income, I think that is stingy, really. I don't think that is very generous.
Egeland's broadside was aimed at wealthy Western nations in general, but the United States took the criticism as a direct affront. Secretary of State Colin Powell.
I wish that comment hadn't been made. I mean, the world is now responding to this catastrophe. The United States has given more aid in the last 4 years than any other nation or combination of nations in the world.
Secretary Powell expressed American sympathy and concern, and he promised the United States would help as much as needed. President Bush watched from his ranch in Crawford, Texas, as the dimensions of the human tragedy and economic destruction grew. Not until Wednesday did the president emerge from his family's Christmas retreat to publicly express his sympathy for victims of the disaster and to announce that the U.S. contribution would expand significantly beyond its early commitment of $35 million.
We are saddened by the terrible loss of life from the recent earthquake and the tsunamis in the Indian Ocean. Our prayers go out to the people who've lost so much to this series of disasters.
By the end of the week, the United States was committed to providing a minimum of $350 million in aid, and President Bush vowed that America's contribution would lead the world's relief effort financially and materially. This past week, the Bush administration also established an instant coalition with Japan, Australia, and India to coordinate relief aid. The alliance would stand separate from the United Nations, which traditionally has led and coordinated international emergency humanitarian efforts. Throughout this past week, we've talked with experts in emergency relief management, foreign policy, and military affairs to get a sense of the humanitarian challenges, geopolitical issues, and logistical problems the disaster poses. On Thursday, we spoke with J. Brian Atwood, the dean of the Hubert H. Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. For 6 years during the Clinton administration, Atwood served as director of the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID. He provided a sense of the scope of the challenge facing relief workers.
It's a planning and coordination nightmare. It's very, very difficult to get access to some of the places where this disaster has occurred. We're talking about 12 countries, 12 governments that one has to deal with. They obviously take the lead in coordinating the disaster relief in their areas, but the United Nations is really the organization that coordinates all of the other donors. But getting access to airports, which are overcrowded, and there aren't very many in this region, providing water, which is the crucial, clean water, is crucial to stop the disease from now occurring. There are probably 5 million people, I understand, from the World Health Organization that are at risk, which means that several thousand more could die of diarrheal disease and other diseases related to bad water. So it's a crucial, it's really quite a difficult and very, very complex logistical challenge.
Jessica Matthews is president of the Carnegie Endowment for World Peace in Washington. In an interview on Thursday, she expressed concerns about the Bush administration's plans for using a coalition of nations separate from the United Nations.
It's absolutely unnecessary for this to have gotten off on the wrong foot with because of the slow response, then the criticism by UN official, then the president being angry at the criticism, that's just unnecessary. It's a shame. It's unworthy of the degree of human suffering that's involved in this tragedy, and it's unworthy of the situation for this kind of spatting to be going on.
Is it your impression that the United States government is not really cooperating with the United Nations?
Yes, that's my impression. I hope it's a wrong one, or I hope it will be corrected. Both the angry exchange of words and then this what appears to be an effort to set up our own coalition and to kind of aggressively move in a separate direction from others doesn't do us any good, and it doesn't serve the people on the ground very well.
I want to go back to the missed opportunity that you described. I guess I'm trying to understand, is this primarily a rhetorical opportunity that was lost, or do you think it's actually assets on the ground that were not moved?
I think that the opportunity that was really lost is a political one. What the rest of the world feels so strongly now is that the U.S. has its set of priorities and just doesn't give a hoot about anybody else's. And this was an opportunity to say that we're not that kind of country, that we do recognize immediately that the suffering and deaths on this massive scale mean just as much to us as the loss of American lives. And we didn't. We lost that opportunity. But as I said, it's something that we can certainly retrieve.
How?
By how forthcoming we are in the days ahead. We have the wealth and the power and the assets to deliver, and we have the spirit. I don't have any question that it's in the American tradition and the American feeling, and there's been an outpouring, enormous outpouring of individual donations by Americans. I think that the government can be just as committed, just as generous, just as forthcoming as individual Americans have been, and I have every hope that it will be.
Walter Russell Mead is Henry A. Kissinger Senior Fellow in U.S. Foreign Policy at the Council on Foreign Relations. In an interview on Friday, he defended the Bush administration's response to the disaster, both financially and in creating a new relief coalition.
In a crisis like this, for one thing, what's given in the first hours and days is not as important in the long run as who's going to be there and help with the development aid and so on. I think it's just much too early to even tell what the American response is going to be, finally. And generally, the U.S., as I understand it, is responsible for something like 25% to 35% of the humanitarian relief that follows a major crisis like that. And my guess is, at the end of the day, our contribution is going to be in that range.
The United States also seems to be creating its own response coalition. At least the president said that that the U.S., India, Japan, Australia are forming an international coalition. What's the point of that?
Well, I imagine that in all of those countries, they feel this is a more efficient way of getting certain types of aid and services delivered, and it makes a certain amount of sense. Australia and Japan have a lot of experience in that region, as does the United States. A global organization like the UN has enormous strengths and can do things that nobody else can do. But very often, regional institutions or regional coalitions are better placed. For example, in Europe, you wouldn't go to the UN to handle some major catastrophe. You'd go to the European Union. And to some degree, I think trying to get a coalition of experienced regional actors together in South Asia is the right thing to do.
Is it meant as a criticism of the UN or a lack of confidence in the UN?
Does it mean that you have no confidence in the United Nations if you say that the United Nations may not have the institutions that are the best and most serviceable in every imaginable contingency? It seems to me that you could be basically quite supportive of the United Nations, but think on this issue, or dealing with this emergency, adding a layer of UN bureaucracy to what we're already doing will slow down getting relief to people who need it rather than speed it up. Why is that a criticism of the UN or anti-UN? Maybe it's just a sort of a practical view of how to help people.
Whether in direct cooperation with the United Nations or through a separate coalition, American help will be led by contingents of the U.S. military. Michael O'Hanlon is an expert on military affairs and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. In a conversation on Friday, he talked about the American military's greatest strengths in extending assistance, the problems it can be expected to face, and the potential that the war in Iraq will limit American military ability to help.
As much as anything, what distinguishes our military from those of other countries and from virtually any other organization of a non-military nature is this ability to go into the most austere environments. The problem is that when you're doing that and you lack good airfields or ports at the point where you're trying to deliver large amounts of equipment, you run into real challenges. And, of course, that's what we face here. So, unfortunately, that dependence limits our ability to move quickly into a place like a remote area of Indonesia. But we do have the ability, once we have that infrastructure, if it can be established or repaired, to deliver huge amounts of equipment and supplies virtually anywhere.
There's been considerable concern in the past year that the war in Iraq has overextended the U.S. military. Is its capacity to help in this relief effort hampered by the commitment of forces and resources in Iraq?
It's constrained to some extent, but the real problem with Iraq is not so much that we have 50 or 75 or 90% of our military involved there. It's that we have 15% involved there over a very extended period of time. That's the sense in which we really are wearing out the military in this operation.
J. Edward Fox is assistant administrator of USAID. In an interview yesterday, he explained the Bush administration's early response to the disaster and the president's plans for working with a coalition separate from the United Nations.
Both India and Australia have been affected greatly by this disaster, are already involved. India, which has suffered large personal losses, is also providing assistance to its neighbors. So it was thought that if we could encourage some individual countries to step forward, that would be a good example to help take a regional posture and then encourage the rest of the world to join, not working in opposition, but working with the United Nations and others as well.
The president didn't speak about it publicly until Wednesday. Why?
The fact of the matter is that Secretary Powell, who was here in Washington, had taken the lead and responded immediately. The president did, in fact, speak to the leaders of the countries involved and, in fact, had sent letters of condolence within the first day. I don't believe there was any reason for him to come forward other than an expression of sympathy, which was made clear, for him to announce exactly what the United States' response was going to do. It took a few days for us to provide him with the facts and an assessment so that we could make a realistic approach.
What is the United States' commitment over the long term?
It doesn't make a lot of sense for us to pick a number because it looks good or sounds good. We have to base it upon some sense of reality. That's one of the reasons why we have seen the changes in what the U.S. response has been as we've had more information. As of the president's decision this last week with $350 million, that is what we see on the horizon. Depending upon what other countries now pledge to do and how that coordination goes, we will begin to develop plans how to spend that amount of money and a budget for it. And if that is sufficient, that will be how we'll execute it. If we find over the next few days or weeks that needs have changed, then we'll have to discuss those within the administration and with the White House and figure out how and where additional funds may be necessary.
J. Edward Fox is Assistant Administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development.